University.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for sharing your time and your expertise, both in this session and throughout the conference. I've already learned a tremendous amount from you. And in the next few minutes, I hope to return the favor and throughout the conference. In the last 6 to 7 years, I've taken a strong interest in the role, possible role of micro-containing crop biostimulants in vegetable crop production, both sustainable, organic, and conventional, for a number of reasons, and I hope to outline those reasons going forward and describe for you today the project, not individual experiments, this project, which comprises a large number of experiments, and summarize for you what we are doing, how, for whom, why, and just a snippet of the results. And I would encourage you to go to our website, program website, if you have additional questions, or of course, you're very much welcome to contact me directly or other members of the team. So just a bit of a refresher for those who are not familiar with the term plant biostimulant. The Biostimulant Coalition is attempting to have language included in the next farm bill defining plant biostimulant. They are making some headway, but if you're familiar with the legislative process, you know how much of a grind that can be. And so while they are making progress, there's still no official language for plant biostimulant, but the best working language is here before you. So it is a substance or microorganism that can do all of the things that are listed there on the screen. And as you are possibly aware already, that category comprises a large number of products, very diverse array of products, humic substances, acids, nitrogenous compounds, and so on. I'd like to emphasize that for today, we are focusing exclusively on those products which have a microbe or microbes as, if not the active ingredient, the primary active ingredient. So I am not here to address in any way other types of products that are listed on this particular graphic. You might also be aware, as we learned in Ohio when we examined organic systems plans, just how popular these products are among organic growers. Both the biofertilizer, also a synonym for biostimulant, and biopesticide usage accounted for roughly 9% of all inputs on these farms over a 5-year period. So pretty notable amount of usage, and that work was outlined in Julie Laudick's MS thesis, which is cited there. We also consider the market data for further evidence that this product is product category is super popular, if you will, and a very active market and growing. The projections are for that market to continue to increase. And that is just an additional sign that more growers are using more of these products more often. You might also be aware that you could, if in the last 18 months and for a number of months to continue, you could essentially be a professional biostimulant biopesticide conference goer. There is a conference, there has been a conference dedicated to this topic, entire conference, not just an ASHS-like conference, an entire conference dedicated to these products each of the last 14 months and for about 5 months to continue. And that tour that you would take would be international in scope. It would include Europe, Central and South America, and the United States and Canada. And these are just a few of examples of those conferences. We track biostimulants in our lab. We have noticed a 1.6 and a 1.5-fold increase in both the number of products and the number of companies involved in offering to the organic growing community OMRI-listed biostimulants. And we've noticed this dramatic increase over the last 3 years. Now, I would argue that the abundance in itself is not the problem. Abundance that we'd like to have growers have a lot of range of opportunity for them to use. What it may portend about the rigor of R&D is another question that's still a bit open. So the problem is that there's a great amount of enthusiasm around the potential benefits of inoculation with biostimulants, particularly beneficial microbes, of course. We are a bit in the age of the microbe. We are understanding plant-microbe interactions better and better every day, and we look to beneficial microbes to provide us with the type of outcomes that are claimed. The problem, which I have noticed and I believe you may have as well, is that there are very few resources to guide the process of making use of that inoculation. consistently, that result consistently worthwhile returns on investment. That's arguably the crux of the issue. So that is one motivation for my having become interested in this product category over the last 6 to 7 years. Perhaps like a number of you, I've been approached over and over and over and over again for input on these products and had nothing on the shelf to offer them in the way, and use myself in a way of offering recommendations. A major reason for that, I say, is that for the most part, those who are offering these products have focused on discovering and identifying microbes and characterizing them, formulating them, packaging and delivering them, and far less time on developing resources that guide people in knowing how to select, use, and evaluate their performance. So as a third stage in the product delivery pipeline, if you will, there's been much less effort given to that particular process. There are examples of major unanswered or minimally addressed questions or issues, which is the scientific part of my interest. You know, host specificity, what soil and cropping conditions must be present? What are the four R's, if you will? The right time, the right place, the right material, the right combination. How do they interact with other inputs? The list goes on and on. So there are legitimate, very robust scientific hypotheses to test around the use of these products. And there are, of course, very profound, extension outreach components that would drive that science as well. So fortunately, with the support and the collaboration of all the entities that are listed here, and with a great number of companies, an increasing number of companies, and always excellent collaborators and the teams that are represented here, both at Ohio State and University of Tennessee, and more locally at Ohio State with Nicole and Stephanie, and before them, Joan Wong and Julie Laudick. With these teams, we've been fortunate to make a bit of the headway, which I'll try to describe for you the rest of the few minutes that I have. So we've tried to develop a very integrated research extension program designed to enhance people's ability to select, use, and evaluate these products. And we've been active in all the areas that are listed here, a number of different states, sites with different crops, different number of products, large number of companies. And so you can see each of these are testable, involve individual testable hypotheses, too numerous for me to describe the outcomes and the methods for you today. So I'm keeping this as an overview. So these are the areas in which we've been active. We can characterize the individual experiments that we have conducted at OARDC in the last 2 years in the following way. If you look at the products that we've included, alphabetically listed here, their composition in terms of bacteria and fungi, and their manufacturer. And for those of you who are somewhat familiar, new to this product category, you'll quickly recognize if you start to study it that products can contain bacteria, fungi, and individual species of one or the other, multiple species of one, multiple species of the other, with roughly 280-some products available in the market. You can surmise correctly that there's a great array, a great diversity in a number of different types of composition, okay? We can further characterize the experiments that we've led this way by breaking it down according to timing, rate, and the products involved here, and then across the top, spinach and carrot and lettuce, all three of which have been conducted in high tunnels, both spring and fall planting, and then tomato and squash, both in certifiable and transitional organic plots, two separate experiments, transitional organic and certified organic. The spinach, carrot, and lettuce are all certified organic. And then wherever you see an X, that's the individual experiment. So 11 different factors that characterize those experiments. And we're not interested, frankly, in identifying the best product. I personally feel that that's a bit of a fool's errand. There are too many products on the market. We're unable to test them all adequately. That's, of course, an important interest, but it's our weakest one. Our main interest is in the overall response to inoculation, you know, plus minus the type of product involved, the rate or timing of, those are our strongest interests. We're trying to develop a portfolio of information to address those larger questions. Now, I'll run through here in the next couple of minutes just examples of experimental outcomes. In each of them, they have the same format. There's a red dot for the control, which is the uninoculated, and then the other bars with their error bars refer to a specific timing or product or rate. They're not identified in this case. I wanted to keep it clean, straightforward, and simple. And what I hope to lead you to is an appreciation for the summary statement that I'll make at the end. So we have care product by application timing, experiment in the spring of 2017, marketable yield in terms of grams per plot, the control, and then three application timing treatments. If we go back to this particular slide, you see that carrot with timing would have been after seeding but before emergence, 1 week after 50% emergence, and 3 weeks after 50% emergence, for example. So looking at the error bars, not much of a positive response, a weak response, but not statistically significant. Spinach product by application timing, spring of 2018, similar timings because it was direct seeded, tremendous error, a lot of variation in the data, also a weak, if any, positive response. Butternut squash, this is certified organic experiment. Butternut squash application, product by application rate. Now we have the control and three rate treatments. Actually, the control had the numerically highest value. Okay. Butternut squash product by application timing experiment. Obviously concluded completed last summer. We're in the midst of the 2018 run. Also the certified organic experiment. A weak trend towards showing a potential benefit of inoculation. Tomato product by application rate, similarly weak trend. You see a picture emerging, at least within the scope of our experiments, okay? We actually have another circumstance in which the control yielded higher than the treated. I'm not trying to cast aspersions in any way, shape, or form on the products or their application, you know, the outcomes of the experiments. I think I consider these data to still be preliminary, but these are the trends that we have demonstrated so far. So in summary, since I've been given the 5-minute sign and I want to leave time for questions, so far product application, regardless of the crop, regardless of the rate, the timing, or the season, that has rarely led to significant changes in yield or quality. I have not shown quality data, but we do our best to describe quality using very subjective and objective measures for all the crops mentioned. And as you can imagine, some of the indicators would vary across those crops. Brix is a common one for a number. But quality we assess using physical, chemical, primarily physical and chemical indicators. So overall, to this point, we are seeing weak, if any, trends in the response to inoculation with the products that we have used, okay? So with that, I'll be happy to address any questions that you might have and before moving on. Yes? It's a fantastic question. Let me repeat. We've shown the data here, mostly done in one soil type, and the question was, would the response change according to soil type? I'm paraphrasing the question. Is that an adequate representation? Okay. Well, the responses differ by soil type. I think it's very likely that it will. This is, if you're studying this literature, this is a very vibrant debate in the literature. The literature asks the question, will microbial biostimulants work better under low fertility conditions or higher fertility conditions? What is the relationship between, the inoculation under different background fertility, for example, tilth, organic matter content, and the like? I think it's an unsettled question, it's imperfectly addressed. The rule of thumb to this point has been that the responses tend to be greater under lower fertility soils. That when the background fertility is high, the response is lower. The moment you say that, you can find a report that shows you the opposite. But I think the preponderance of evidence at this point is that the response by a percent increase over control is greater under lower fertility background? I would characterize, that's a good question. So do I characterize our study sites as low or high fertility? They range. The two high tunnels that we are using for carrot lettuce and spinach differ. One is a manufactured medium with, I'd say, moderate fertility. The other is soil itself, low to moderate. And the two field sites I would characterize as moderate, low to moderate. So that could be an explanation for why we are seeing the responses so far to what we have. Carol. Sure. Sure. Question is cost of the products. How do the costs compare to a, if you will, regular fertility program if fertility is the issue and there's an expectation that we can use inoculants and maybe cut back on fertility? The costs range widely. I've heard quotes of $10 an acre to more like $80 an acre, depending on the number of applications. And let me just wrap up that conversation this way for now by saying Sabu Kumarapan is an economist on the team. He is looking at this very closely. Secondly, it's my understanding that most growers approach their use as A, they cannot do any harm. B, they may just do some good. C, the cost is not prohibitive. Let's do it. It's like an insurance policy. So that's the way to approach. But when they start to run numbers, especially if they use repeated applications, they're surprised by how much money they're spending on them. And that's where the costs or the return on investment calculation may become a bit more keen, if you will. So it's a great question. Thank you.